This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's our episode of Good Things, where we speak to good people doing good things. And 25-year-old Jocelyn Yao made history when she became the youngest woman of color to become a mayor of a California city. So the new mayor of Eastvale, Riverside County in California, Jocelyn is also a new mother and a grad student who served as a district representative for the California State Senate and as an aide for the United States House of Representatives, where she worked to help seniors, families, small businesses, nonprofit organizations, and children access valuable government services. The daughter of a Vietnamese refugee and a Chinese Malaysian, she knows how important it is for immigrant voices to be represented in politics, and she hopes her story will help inspire younger generations to lead in their communities too. And Mia Jocelyn joins me now to share her story. Welcome, Jocelyn. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
So maybe we can kind of like get to know you a little bit better. Maybe you can share a little bit about your early years. You know, so as I mentioned, you have a Malaysian dad and you have a Vietnamese mom, and you guys moved to California in the 90s where you were born. Am I correct?
Yeah. So my mom came over to the United States much earlier during the Vietnam War. She had been here since I want to say she was around 7 years old. And my dad, on the other hand, went to California. Actually, he went to Washington State first for his college, and then went to Arizona. And then finally, he went to Silicon Valley in the Bay Area. But actually that was how they met each other. So they met each other in the Silicon Valley in San Jose, and that was where I was born. But after that, my grandfather, my dad's dad, who back then was in Malaysia, he had cancer. And I'm sure a lot of you could relate to this, you know, in Malaysian culture, in Chinese culture, there's this duty, there's this family duty, especially as a son, as the oldest son, there's this obligation to take care of your aging parents. And so my dad, who is the youngest of all his siblings, he decided to move back to Malaysia. And back then, you know, my parents were already married, they had me. So we all moved to Malaysia together. And I was only 1 year old back then. So, you know, we were in Malaysia, and then my grandfather recovered. By then I had already started school. And my parents figured, you know, it might be a good thing to just continue staying there, have me go to a Chinese school, make sure that I learn Mandarin. And so, you know, to get more exposure and in addition to learning new languages. And so we stayed there. Next thing you know, I graduated from high school and from secondary school. And we moved back to the United States right after that. And I attended colleges here.
Okay. And maybe you can just tell me a little bit about your family, you know, because you speak a lot about them in your interviews. And am I right that you credit them with sort of instilling that importance of, you know, giving back and you know, community service? Were they the ones that sort of instilled that in you?
100%. So my dad, he is a lifelong Lions Club member. And so, you know, back then when we were in Malaysia, he would always bring me out to all these like Lions Club community events, and we would go to dialysis center, orphanage house, senior center, dialysis, like all, just all kinds of community events. And so that was my exposure to public service, to giving back to the community. And then my mom, on the other hand, she always valued, would always tell me the importance of kindness and empathy. That's the one thing that, like, she would call me out even till this day, even though I'm already 25, 26 years old now. She would be like, well, you know, like, for instance, I was at a grocery store, and I told her, I was like, mom, like, I saw this, you know, another mom with three kids, and she was doing grocery shopping with three kids by herself. And then my mom was like, well, did you offer her help? Like, what did you do? And I was like, mom. And you know, she still calls me out. She's like, what did you do, right? Like, what did you, how did you help the person, instead of just talking about it. Mm-hmm. She would always, so that's my mom. And so that, you know, a combination of that lead me to where I'm at today. And And also when I was in secondary school in Getwa, Al-Sarkada, that's where I got involved in Girl Guides. And we did quite a lot of community events as well. And so that really shaped who I am today. And that was what led me to politics and public service.
Okay. And we're going to talk a little bit about that a bit later. But let's just go back to, so, you know, after you finished school, after you finished high school, you mentioned you went back to the States to attend college, right? And I know from previous interviews, you said that, you know, English wasn't your first language. You know, it was like your third or fourth, right? And what was it like, you know, adapting to life in the US after all those formative years spent here in Malaysia?
Yeah, I spent 15 years in Malaysia. So, you know, it's funny whenever I read the news and people are like, well, is she even considered Malaysian? I was like, why would I not? But anyway, that's a whole different debate.
That's another chat for another day.
That's another chat. But I'm just, I mean, I spent 15 years there. I don't know how that doesn't include me as a Malaysian. But anyway, I spent 15 years there. And as we all know, you know, especially in Al-Azhar, that I'm in the Chinese community, we don't speak English. And I went to a Chinese school. So my main language was Mandarin. And then at home, you know, I had my grandparents living with us. So they speak Hokkien. So they speak Hokkien. And then between my parents, my mom is a Chinese Vietnamese of Teochew. She's from Teochew descendant. So they might be between my parents, they speak Cantonese. So
wow.
So I grew up in a household that speak Hokkien, Cantonese, Mandarin, a little bit of English, like Malay, of course. And so, you know, it's a combination of a lot of languages. But English was not our first language. None of us actually. So it was definitely a little bit of a struggle, though I do have to say I am so grateful that my parents would let me watch English show when I was in Malaysia, which helped a lot.
Okay.
Watching English show, that really helped. And then when I got back to the United States, it was definitely challenging in the very beginning, but not necessarily for long. And the reason for that was because right when I first moved back, immediately I started getting involved. I was looking for clubs to get involved. I actually looked up Girl Guides in the United States, which we don't have Girl Guides. It's called Girl Scouts. And right. They have an age limit. So I was like, oh, darn it. I was actually going to get involved in Girl Scouts in the United States. So that didn't happen. But and I was trying to look into Lions Club. However, my friends started recruiting me into student government. And so that was how I got involved in community service here in the United States. And that really helped. You know, that's the thing about community service is that it gives you a sense of community and it connects you to people whom you might not have met if you had not been involved. So, you know, that really helped me expand my network and my community. And it very quickly through that, like I felt like I was at home again. So that helped a lot. It was actually through community service.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Mayor Jocelyn Yao. She is the mayor of Eastvale, Riverside County in California. And Jocelyn was the youngest woman of color to become a mayor of a California city. And of course, she does have her roots here in Malaysia as well. She spent her formative years here. So she's sharing her story with us. And after this quick break, we're going to find out more about how she became mayor. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It is an episode of Good Things, where we speak to good people doing good things, and we just have some nice conversations with them. And joining me today over Zoom is Mayor Jocelyn Yao. She is the mayor of Eastvale, Riverside County in California, and 25-year-old Jocelyn is the youngest woman of color to become a mayor of a California city. And Jocelyn, of course, has some roots here in Malaysia, so we're getting to know her a bit better, and we're finding out, you know, how a 25-year-old became a mayor of a city in California. So, you know, before the break, Jocelyn, we were talking about how you got into college, and that's kind of where you did some community service, and that got you interested in public advocacy work. Am I correct? Why was that important for you? You know, why was that something that you wanted to continue doing? You know, you said you did it from Malaysia already. Why was it something that you wanted to continue doing when you moved to the States?
Yeah. No, so I, you know, I that's how I grew up. And initially when I moved back to the States, the reason why I did it initially was really to find that sense of belonging, to find that sense of community. Mm-hmm. It's very isolating as you know, someone who's been abroad for so many years, you move to a country that you barely know, a city that you barely know. And you don't know anyone, right? Like you're there by yourself. Well, I have my younger brother, but that was it. So initially I chose to continue public service to give back to the community because, you know, I was trying to find that sense of community and get to know, my neighbors, get to know my community, get to know my city better. But as, you know, as I started getting involved, you'll realize like they're just like any other city, any other places, there's always issues that's there in the community, right? And Riverside County is, you know, Eastville, it's we have a slightly higher median income, but Riverside County in general, a lot of families are in poverty. I remember I was taking public bus. When I first moved back to the States, I didn't have a car, so I had to take public buses to colleges. And I went to two different colleges. And when I was on the bus, like along the ride, I remember seeing a lot of people who were homeless. And, you know, so I wanted to give back to the community and to make sure that, you know, people have basic necessities, right? And so that was my thought. And however, what got me into politics as I was getting involved, doing community work, you know, my friends were like, well, you know, you could advocate on behalf of them. I was like, oh, like, what's that? Tell me more. Because I've never heard about. So that's the thing. I had never been involved in politics or advocacy or anything in Malaysia. And that was something that we never talk about at home. My impression of politics when I was in Malaysia was like, oh, like it's gossip. Like, you know, you hear about it, yeah. Like your neighbors talking about it. But I always thought of it as like people just gossiping. But so when my friends were like, well, you know, you could advocate for them, like you could advocate for policy changes. And I was like, that's interesting. I'm not sure if I'm following what you mean, but sure, like tell me more about it. And next thing I know, we were advocating for legislations that would help students, that would help homeless students. And then next thing I know, I was in Sacramento, like, you know, advocating for all these bills. Sacramento is the capital for California. And so that was what led me to politics. And the way I see it, as I tell people, is that community service is great because you're helping people solve their immediate problem, but advocacy and legislation and politics are even better because you are helping them solve their issue long term. Mm-hmm. So and so I firmly believe that, you know, until this day, I still do both. Like actually just this morning, we were out there, we had a citywide street cleanup where we clean up the entire city, helping families and, you know, all that. So I still do both. I truly believe that you need a little bit of both to tackle a lot of social issues. Some people cannot afford to wait. Some people need help immediately. But then ideally, in an ideal world, you want to give long-term solution instead of, you know, just solving that issue one time, right? So that's the reason why I'm in politics. And then I still continue to do community service, but I see it as tag team, right? Like you doing both to really help people. So that's how I see it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, running for mayor is not sometimes on the top of people's minds, you know, like even when you enter politics, because I mean, you did serve as a district representative for the California yeah. State mm-hmm. Senate. You were an aide for the U.S. House of Representatives. Yeah. I mean, and you did a lot of work there, you know, to help yeah. all these undeserved communities. Right. But what made the jump from there to mayor of, you know, mayor of Eastville?
That's a really good question that no one has ever asked me. And you're absolutely correct. I could have just continued doing my work through state Senate, through U.S. House of Rep, Congress. You're absolutely correct. But I decided to make that jump also because, you know, I don't see a lot of representation. You know, as a woman, as a young person, as a minority here in California, in the United States, I don't see a lot of representation. And I was getting frustrated, like just seeing in Congress and in state Senate, I don't see a lot of people like me. And to be completely honest with you, when I ran, I did not know if I was going to win. I just went ahead. I was like, you know what? I'll do it. I'll try my very best. I'll give my 110%. And I'll let the voters decide. But I knew I would regret it if I had not run. There was an open seat. The incumbent had decided not to run for re-election. And I said, you know, like, why not? This is something that I'm really passionate about. And I could potentially be in a position of power to make changes and have that platform to make changes. Why let this pass, right? Like, well, why give it up? Like, why not just give it a try? And so I went for it. I went for it, not to be completely honest with you, again, not knowing if I even had a shot at it, because you know, I thought about it. Who would listen to a 23-year-old? When I first ran, I was only 23-year-old. I was like, who would vote for a 23-year-old? I wasn't even sure myself. And so, you know, but I knocked on every single door. I knocked on every single door, and I did it every day, rain or shine. It was raining. I was out walking. We even had wildfire. We have a lot of wildfire here in California. And I remember there was this one weekend, it was really bad, and it was smoky, hazy, but I was out knocking on doors anyway. I did it every single day for months, for I don't even know how many months, for at least 3-4 months. And I would knock on doors for hours every day. And I had a lot of people who, you know, who disagree with what I stand. I have people who disagree with me. I have people who slammed the doors on me. But I also had a lot of people who appreciated the fact that I was there. Like, I was there talking to them in person, in real life, instead of on social media or even just not communicating at all. A lot of people appreciated that, you know, and it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter if the person is, you know, what his or her ideologies or ethnicity or gender. I knock on every single door. And in return, I won. Like, I won my election with 70% of the vote. And I think that also goes to show that, you know, people want someone who would listen. People want a representative who will actually listen to them. And so, you know, I try to make it a priority. It's hard. You know, there's a lot going on, and we only have 24 hours and there's a baby. But I try my very best to still be there, out there in person, because that's what the people want, you know. And so that was how I got elected, and I'm really glad. You know, I'm actually very surprised that I was the youngest minority woman to be elected as mayor. But I'm also optimistic. I'm optimistic that there will be more, and we're definitely seeing this trend, especially in recent years. I'm not sure about Malaysia, but in recent years in the United States. We're definitely seeing more women. We're seeing more minorities. We're seeing more young people who are running, who are getting elected. And I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that we'll see more changes coming, good changes, hopefully. That's where I'm at. But again, to be completely honest with you, I did not know if I was gonna make it. But I took that chance, took that leap of faith, and here I am.
And congratulations. I mean, you know, you did that hard work. There's, you know, well done. Like, you know, you give people like me so much hope, you know, and representation is so important, isn't it? Because, you know, we don't see people like us, for example, you know, women of color in, you know, these sorts of positions. So imagine mm-hmm. what you're doing for a generation of women who see you, you know, doing this, and they know that I can be that as well. You know, that's so important, right? Seeing it happen, the representation of it.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, I always tell people, like, just seeing it, like you know, people always think as politics, as Which is true. It is dominated by men, but people always think that it's a field for men, especially retirees, at least for here, you know, in California and in the United States. But it's not, and it shouldn't be, right? Like, why would I want a group of retired men making decisions for me? And I always tell people, like, do you want your grandpa to choose your clothing for you? I wouldn't. Like, I would rather make my own decision on my own outfit. Like, why would I want my grandpa to choose an outfit for me? I already know I won't like it. I appreciate the effort, but I already know it's not going to be what I want. So, you know, just that's why it's so important, I think, to have young people. But not only just young people, I think just like in general, like having a diverse group of leaders, having a diverse group of representatives to represent the people, because Malaysia, California, the United States, we are all very diverse. That's right. The reality about Malaysia, I live there, I've seen it. It's a very, very diverse country. And then here in the United States, it's a very diverse country too. So I firmly believe that we need leaders who reflect the dynamic of the people.
Yeah, and that is so important. And I guess, you know, I do need to kind of pivot and just ask you about what's happening in the US, you know. I mean, you know, for anyone over here who's reading about it, we're not living there, of course, like you are, but it's a really, it looks like a very stark picture, you know, a very polarized nation, you know, a very divided country. I mean, what happened on the 6th of January, actually, what happened at the US Capitol, that, you know, took, I think, the whole world by shock, right, to see that happening, you know. I mean, first of all, what was your reaction to the events at the U.S. Capitol?
It was very disappointing. It was heartbreaking. It was very heartbreaking because, especially as someone who used to work for Congress, I felt like it almost felt like my second home was attacked. It was very personal, and I have a lot of friends who still work there, and I had to check in with my friends, even the Capitol Police, because when I was working there, we had developed good relationships with the Capitol Police, with other staffers, other electeds there, and so I had to check in with a lot of them. It was very personal. On the other hand, I wouldn't say I was very surprised. In fact, I would not say, like, a lot of people were, as heartbreaking as it was and as disappointed as we were, it was also not too surprising. If you have been following U.S. politics, you'll know that we are so divided. Like this, and there's statistics, there's data behind this. Data is showing that Americans are more divided than ever. And, you know, you have the left going further to the left. You have the right going further to the right. And I firmly believe that, well, with the people we have in Washington, D.C., the rhetoric that they have with all the tweets, you know, all those stuff, it definitely make it worse. But even before that, even before 2016, right, it was already really bad. There's this divide between the two parties, and there's a lot of reasons, and, you know, there's no one reason. It's not just because of one sole reason as to why this is happening. You know, there's also that social media aspect of it. You have people who are hiding behind a fake account, right? And it's so much easier. It's so much easier to attack someone on social media. And you have that divisiveness that's growing. But also you have a lot of fake, you know, not necessarily fake news, but a lot of things, like, you could alter them on social media, on the internet. Like, you could change a picture. You could edit a picture, a video. And it's so mind-blowing. I'm not sure about Malaysia, right? But here in the United States, I am things that sometimes things that are being circulated, I'm just like, this, they're fake. They're fake, and yet they're being circulated everywhere on both left and right, you know, on news, not news channel, I'm sorry, but on Facebook, on Twitter. And so, you know, I'm actually really glad now that they have a fact check feature on Facebook, and I think that helps a lot. But Oh, come on. I'm just like, it's a little bit too late. Like, why is it that we're only doing this now? And it's very frustrating. There's that aspect. But also, you know, the reality is that the United States is also changing. You are seeing a lot more immigrants. And so, you know, there's also that fear for some people, right? You know, there's that fear of immigrants taking over. And so that also sparks that hatred. So that's also definitely one part of it. And so, you know, but it's just a lot. Like I mean, yeah, a lot of people would say it's Trump and that's the reason. I actually don't think so. I mean, the fact that he got elected tells you that it's already there, right? Like that sentiment was already there. And that's why he got elected and that surprised a lot of people. So, you know, I think this divisiveness has been happening for years, and it's just getting worse and worse. And, you know, just because Trump is now out of office or will soon be out of office and we have Biden coming in, I don't think that's the solution. Biden will have a lot of work to do to help bridge that gap. And do I have the solution? No, I don't. I don't.
Oh, I
think you're going to ask me that next. No, I don't. But I'll tell you this, as leaders, as local leaders, especially here at local level, I feel like I have the obligation to help bridge that gap at least at the local level. And you know, for instance today, like I was mentioning earlier, you know, we had a community-wide street cleanup. We had hundreds, like over 200 of residents showing up. And you know, I think that's what that matters, is that I at least how I see it, is that, you know, have people show up, have that conversation, give back to the community, get to know your neighbor, get to know your city. And you might realize we're really not that different. You know, there might be more, we might have more in common than you think. And that was also the message that I got. Like I told you, you know, when I was knocking on doors, when I was campaigning, yes, I had people who disagree with me 100%. I had people who just hated me for no reason, slammed the door against me, didn't even give me a chance to speak. But for the majority of people, we had conversations. We had conversations about things that matter to people, the bread and butter issue. We had conversation about economy. We had conversation about childcare. We had conversation about, you know, like businesses, small businesses. Those are issues that affect people on a daily lives, you know. And yes, you know, there's a lot going on in Washington, D.C., but what I truly think that at local level, it's all about the bread and butter issues. It's about issues that truly affect people, and having that conversation, you'll be surprised. Like we have more in common than people would think. And so, here at the local level, that's what we're doing, is to help bridge that gap.
Yeah, because you understand the lived realities of people, right? You're not just sort of like, you know, in Washington kind of telling people what they should do. It's
Yeah,
you're part of the community. And I guess that's why people were drawn to you as well, because you do understand where they're coming from, the bread and butter issues. I mean, what you're saying, you know, there's so much, you know, that's happening in Malaysia, which is so similar, you know, there's that gap between understanding what the people need. And besides, you know, the politicking aside, you know, there's all these issues that need taking care of. And it's wonderful to hear that, you know, for you as a mayor, that's something that you are going to be really focusing on and working, right?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, guess what? Everyone has to pay bills. We all have to pay for our bills. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like things that truly matter to people. And you know, like just, in fact, you know, it's so mind-blowing that I always tell people this. They all know who the president is. They all know who the vice president is. But a lot of people don't even know who their city council members are. Yeah. They don't know who their mayors are, right? But I always tell people, they are like mayors, city council members, and maybe even like your state representatives are the ones making decisions that probably affect you more than those who are in Washington, D.C. Like as mayor, as city council members, we make decisions that affect your streets, like right outside your house. We might even be making decisions about your house, you know, about zoning, about your schools, the schools that your kids go to. So, you know, we make decisions that directly impact your lives versus those in Washington, D.C. Yeah, they can talk all day, but they're not going to be making decisions that have direct impact on your life,
yeah.
At least not as much as those on the local level. But that's what I want people to realize, is that we're here and we're here to serve you. And, you know, yes, there's a lot going on in Washington, D.C., but the way I see it, like, those are noise. And let's put that aside. Let's focus on issues that really, truly matter to the people.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much talk of healing, right? I mean, that's what I think a lot of, I suppose with Biden coming in, that's the kind of message that, well, maybe the left, their side have been putting out, right? Healing and, you know, bringing the nation together. And I guess, what are your hopes for 2021? You know, what will you be working on in particular, and what are you looking forward to this year?
For me, I want to bring that sense of community to the city. I mean, the city, generally speaking, it's in a pretty good shape. But with everything that's going on on a national level, I want to bring that sense of community to the city and public service. You know, I that's how I grew up, and that's how I want to continue. That's what I want to continue. It's public service. And that's my focus, is how do we bring unity to this city through public service? That's my focus for this year.
Okay, excellent. That sounds wonderful. And I mean, you know, as I mentioned at the start, you know, you have a 7-month-old son, you're still a grad student, you're a mayor of a city in California, yeah. You've got a lot on your plate. You know, what would your message be for anyone who's maybe feeling a bit hopeless? You know, we're still living through the pandemic. There's just so much going on. I mean, any message that you would like to leave, you know, all of us with?
Oh, gosh, there's so much going on. That is true. I'll say this, and I have been telling everyone this, especially those in Malaysia, right? The grass will always be greener. The grass is always greener, right? But the reality is this: nobody knows your community, nobody knows your city, nobody knows your country as well as you. And so, instead of always looking outwards for a solution, you might already have a solution, or that you might just have to work towards it. Because the reality is this: nobody knows your community. Nobody knows your neighbor as well as you do. And so, you know the issues that affect your city, your community. And so be the change. Be the change that, as cliche as it sounds, be the change that you want to see. And don't, you know, the grass will always be greener. I always tell people that, because I get this, like, you know, we always want to look to other countries. Like, what are other countries doing? What are other people doing? Well, and it's great. I mean, you could look to other countries for guidance, but solutions have to be local. Like, you are the person who's closest to the problem. And so, you know, be the change, and take actions and just do it. Be the change that you want to see.
Okay. Yeah. Just go knock on doors, right? Whether they slam the door in your face or not, just not go talk.
Well, you know, that too is that you have to, you know, be persistent it's not always rainbows and sunshine, right? Like, people are now telling the story of me, oh, like, 25-year-old elected, yeah. But whoa, if you had followed me, you know, a few years ago, you'll know that it was not rainbows and sunshine knocking on doors, right? And so, yeah, that's definitely be persistent and believe in yourself, because you do know your community the best.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. I've been speaking to Mayor Jocelyn Yao. She is the mayor of Eastvale in Riverside County in California. Jocelyn is the youngest woman of color to become a mayor of a California city. And, you know, we were just chatting about her life and, you know, what she's up to, going to be doing this year, you know, in a country that is quite divided at the moment. And, you know, basically, I guess, you know, as Jocelyn said, just be the change you want to be. That is, I think, the takeaway message from all of this. Yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So if you know, if anyone's interested to follow your work and the things that you're doing, I guess we can do that over Twitter and things like that.
Yeah, social media is great. I'm most active on Instagram, just like most 25, 26 year old. You can find me there. But yeah, I'm most active on Instagram, but I'm also on Facebook, Twitter, and of course, Instagram.
Okay. Yes. All right. Thank you so much. And all the best to you. And, if you'd like to follow Jocelyn, just follow her on Instagram, number one, and all the other social media platforms. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can always search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. You can also find us on Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.